Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Coramdale Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church in Bellevue, Nebraska. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about quitting social media.
What do you think about that, podcast world? Quit social media. I was just going to let you guys chime in, but never mind. It's cool. I'll just keep talking.
Do podcasts count as social media? Because people wouldn't listen to us if they count.
They're a product.
Okay. Just want to get that clear.
How do you find out about podcasts without social media?
You can keep listening to this.
Your friends are like, hey, this podcast is awesome. You should
go to iTunes when you're bored and search for it.
By the way, can we tell that funny story about the Wednesday conversation?
What is the funny story?
Well, I think it was you that told it to me. It might have been you, Dusty. Some guy came up to me at church on Sunday and said, hey, I've been trying to get my buddy to listen to the Wednesday conversation for months. And then some professor of his that he really respects out of nowhere was like, hey, there's a podcast I think you'd really like. And it was the Wednesday conversation.
Shut up.
Yeah. How awesome is that?
From a different state. A different state.
Wow.
What school is this?
It's to not be mentioned. To not be mentioned.
To not be mentioned. Come on. Bob Jones.
All right. So here's where this topic comes from. It's a new year, and obviously at the beginning of a new year, lots of folks sort of take stock of, man, what's taking my time? What's taking my energy? What am I spending my my focus on? And, you know, make resolutions about how we'd like to sort of work more effectively or efficiently in the new year. I was playing basketball with a friend of mine maybe a month ago, and he's like, hey, man, I've been reading this book. You got to get it. It's called Deep Work. And he was the second pastor friend of mine that I had heard recommend this book. And so I bought it. It's by an author named Cal Newport, who I think is a computer science professor at MIT or someplace like that. So he's not primarily a writer. He's primarily a professor of computer science. But it's a really fascinating book. The subtitle is Rules for Focused Success in a Distracted World. I can summarize the 250-page book for you in a few sentences, and here they are. His basic premise is we don't work deeply, by and large. We live in a world that's sort of perpetually distracted and that encourages us toward shallowness. However, the best work you do, the way you contribute the most value in your profession is through deep work that takes sustained focus, sustained concentration, and that no one below your pay grade can do as effectively as you. It's sort of the stuff you're uniquely gifted and skilled to do. Now, he's obviously writes a business book, so he's trying to sort of put a businessy slant on it. And so what he says is, hey, if you want to bring the most value to your organization and have the most fulfillment in your work, you need to do deep work, Chris, hence the title of the book.
Deep work.
Deep work. So he has the first half of the book is basically him just framing out this thesis, the idea. And the second part of the book is four rules he gives for how do you do deep work. And rule number three is quit social media, which we found to be a provocative topic, especially in a new year where a lot of us take stock of our time and energy. And so we thought we'd hash out the thesis of this chapter where he says, hey, quitting social media is actually a way to become deeper and more productive. So he has some provocative things to say in this chapter. And I think, you know, we've done podcasts on social media before, guys. And he frames it up in a way that's a little more nuanced and coming sort of, again, from a more professional angle of actually social media sort of steals your capacity to bring the best value to your organization. So we thought it'd be good to hash out his few pages of work here and talk about what would it look like to quit social media.
What I found particularly interesting is his pointing out of how we have this view that the content that we put out on social media is worthwhile and valuable to the world, that people actually want to hear all of our thoughts and random musings on every little minute detail of our life. And so he throws out this challenge. He says, get off social media for 30 days. Don't tell anybody you're going to do it. Don't post a, hey, peace out Twitter for the next month. Just stop using it. And then after 30 days, he asks, or he has you take stock of two questions. One, was your life significantly diminished by not being on social media? And two, did anybody notice? And I think the second one is particularly important.
Ouch.
If nobody has noticed that you are off social media, then that says something about the content that you're putting out. If nobody cares that you've stopped posting on Twitter or Instagram, it means that you're probably not putting out anything that is of substance or that anybody really cares to read. And so then he goes into this whole explanation of how you're wasting your time in this idea that you're being productive and putting out content that's meaningful when really it isn't. And so you should use that time to focus on things that really are productive.
But social media was supposed to like connect me to the other people in the world. So you're telling me to disconnect from people to, and that's not going to affect my
disconnect
life?
Disconnect from electronic people.
Just your fake friends, not your real friends.
Oh, okay.
No, listen, so this guy's writing obviously as a guy who works in the tech field. So this is interesting, Chris. When he frames up these two questions, question one, he actually frames it the opposite of how you said it. Would the last 30 days have been notably better if I had used social media? So like, is it adding something significant to my life? And secondly, did people care that I wasn't using this service? He says, if your answer is no to both questions, you should quit it permanently. If your answer was yes, then you should keep using it. So he's saying, hey, there are people who like their livelihood does depend on the use of social media. And so if you can say, yeah, actually people cared that I wasn't using it and my life or work would have been notably better to use it, then he's saying, well then you should keep using it. But the point is, for most of us, the answer is actually going to be no, my life wouldn't have been notably better had I been using it, and no one cared or noticed that I was not using social media.
So read this article about halfway through a hiatus from social media, went off social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, etc., for Advent, just in order to be more reflective and present. Had a conversation with my wife about it, and just, you know, there were times where I'd just be checking out at home late at night, or, you know, like 8:30, kids are in bed, and I'd just be scrolling because why not? Well, that got frustrating to me. It wasn't like she confronted me on that and said, hey, you're always on your phone or something. I was just like, this is weird. Why do I do this?
What was frustrating about it?
I was just filling my brain. I just couldn't stand idle time. And so if there was space, I was doing something. So if there was space, I'd be on social media. So interesting, if I had to answer those two questions, it's not like anybody came up to me and was like, hey, I've really noticed that you've been off social media lately. We've been missing you. That's just not the case at all. But you're on social media all the time because you're afraid, actually, and he hits this on the book, Deep Work, that you're afraid that you're going to be missing out.
The FOMO.
FOMO, baby.
The only real thing that I missed was actually news, because I realized, oh, I think I read a lot more articles off of Twitter than anything else. But I didn't necessarily miss photos of people's kids or what they ate that day or anything like that. It was more like, oh, I don't really know what's going on unless I'm tapping into Twitter every now and then.
I got a pretty cool Christmas tree photo with like some good lighting. You missed that?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I saw it in real life.
Right.
So, true.
Yeah.
True.
Right.
Yeah. Good point.
Had to come over.
So when you were off for 30 days or more?
Yeah.
A whole month?
Yep.
Did you experience like withdrawal? Did it feel like, oh crap, what am I gonna do with my thumbs, or what am I gonna do with my extra brain space? Or did it just feel like, oh, actually, no big deal?
Actually, I haven't read this book, Deep Work, but I think what it did was just, it made me appreciate conversations that I was in the present with. So what's interesting about social media is when you're on it all the time, you're aware of how conversations can go. So you can start a conversation halfway through and be like, hey, so I saw that your wife was sick and you're at the ER. You know?
Yeah.
Like, instead of it being like, what's going on lately? Oh, your wife's sick, you know,
yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yep.
So it made me a better listener, I think is how you could put it. The other thing I noticed was that we can't stand idle time. And so there's just this constant, like I was last night, I was at this pizza place and in line to grab some pizza, and everybody was on their phone because it was, well, they're standing in line. Don't waste any time. Get on Instagram, jump on Twitter, do something, be productive, they think. But I think it just fills your brain with useless information.
So this is really interesting. The chapter before Quit Social Media, his other rule is embrace boredom. And he makes this exact point that actually some of the best work we do comes when our minds just have idle space. So like when we used to have to stand in line, or we used to have to, like, you know, we're stuck somewhere and there's nothing we can do, you know, to sort of look on our phone and fill our mind with stuff. That's where some of the best creativity comes from. Sometimes you solve problems or come up with new ideas just because you're bored. I noticed this just the other day. I was working on sermon prep and sort of stuck and trying to make some thoughts come together. So I went in the kitchen and started doing the dishes because I was like, I got to get away from this for a while. And started doing the dishes. And as I'm washing the dishes, I'm like coming up with these brilliant connections just because I basically was like, instead of staring at my Bible trying to make sense of a text, I was just like, you know what? I need to go do something that doesn't connect to this. And when we fill all of our idle time and our sort of boredom space with social media, it actually keeps us from sometimes making important connections and having the brain space to sort of do deep work.
I'm kind of afraid that this winter all my sermons are going to be horrible because some of my best ideas came when I was mowing the yard in the spring and summer. So I'm a little concerned.
And there's no snow to shovel.
There's no snow to shovel right now. So
you could go rake it or something.
That'd be a little weird.
It is interesting to think about, is social media contributing to my life in a way that's actually helpful? And I just think most people would be hard-pressed to answer that in the positive.
So let's frame out some of what Newport does in this chapter. Is he just gives us he sort of gives you some mental hooks to hang on reasons for quitting. So he's essentially trying to build a case for, like, why would quitting social media be a good idea? So here's a couple things he brings up. One, realize that every social media company is marketing to you, right? Like they want you engaged. And so they're figuring out ways to keep you engaged. And a lot of it does rely on that fear of missing out. But if you think about it, like social media, whether you're on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, whatever it is, it's one of the only things you give permission to sort of like ping you all the time, right? Like you can set your notifications to where like anytime somebody posts something new or responds to something you've posted, it pings you. And so you're giving these companies permission to interrupt you all the time. And he's basically saying, we see that as like a social networking thing, but really it's a marketing play. It's a way these companies become ubiquitous in our lives, which increases the revenue and the value of their company. So if you start to see it less as, oh, this is how I stay connected with my friends, and more as, this is Babylon's strategy for impressing themselves into my life 24 hours a day, it kind of gives a different slant to what it is that you're giving permission for. The other thing he points out is the average number of followers for a Twitter user is 208. And he says, if you think about the fact that there's 208 people that are interested enough in what you have to say to follow you on social media, that can start generating like this sense of like, oh man, I'm important.
I'm a big deal.
That's significant. I got 200 Twitter followers. But he says, actually, they're not really followers. He says, this is what's fascinating. He says, okay, look. He says, I had a blog back before social media, and as I was trying to build an audience for my blog, it's a lot of work to put out good content that people want to go read. That's how you used to have to build a blog, is you had to write stuff that was good enough that people would want to go read it and spend their time reading it. He says, here's what social media is. You don't actually have 208 people interested in what you have to say. You have 208 people who have signed an implicit agreement with you that says, if I like your posts, will you like my posts? Is basically it's not a, oh, I'm really interested in what you have to say. It's there's this implicit back and forth. You like my status update, I'll like your status update. And we don't often see it through that lens, but I remember at the beginnings of Twitter, I think I got on Twitter in 2010. And at the very beginning of Twitter, this was right after it had become a smartphone app. In the early days of Twitter, it was actually text message driven. So it used the text feature on your cell phone, and you would actually get text messages every time someone posted something. When they first made it a smartphone app, and I got on it, at that time, there was a lot of pastors in my circle that were on Twitter, and they would all be like, hey, man, I followed you. How come you didn't follow me back? That's just like, what am I like required to follow Jesus. You back now? Like, but that's why we're in this is like, you follow me, so I'll follow you. Like, but a lot of those guys were sort of relentless platform builders. And that was like what their deal was man, if I follow you, what I'm expecting is you follow me back. To this day, I think I follow maybe 70 people on Twitter. And the reason is because I'm trying to keep my audience small, because I use it for what you said, Dusty. I use it primarily for news and for sort of connecting me to thought leaders. And so I use it as a way of taking in articles that I want to read, social commentary that I want to read. I don't use it as like I follow all my friends because they follow me. And that's in the past frustrated some people because it does sort of follow this implicit social contract.
So if I'm currently following you on Twitter right now and all of a sudden I stop unfollowing you, don't take it personally.
Well, you won't even know. Yeah.
Good point. So what this chapter in this book has been really pushing me on, and I found incredibly helpful, is that it's challenging me to ask what is important, what is meaningful work throughout my week, not just within the career sphere, not just being like my job as a pastor, but just my whole life. Like, what am I giving my time to? What is actually meaningful and deep and has impact, not just sort of what feels like it's important or feels like I'm producing something or engaging with someone or interacting, whether it be social media or in any other way. So I think that's just a good question for us. Like, what is the mechanism that we have that is challenging our assumption related to, hey, is what I'm doing important? Am I spending time on things that really matter, that have impact, that are value adds in a legitimate sense? Or am I just sort of going, you know, half-cocked throughout my week and just throwing a lot of stuff out there, whether it be social media or whatever it may be, where I'm not focused, I'm not reflecting on the importance of these things? So I think if anything, you know, whether you get off social media or not, this question of is what you're giving your time to, what are you investing in, actually meaningful? And how do you gauge that? And are you gauging that?
That's a good question. Here's a quote from the book. These services, social media services, aren't necessarily, as advertised, the lifeblood of our modern connected world. They can be fun, but in the scheme of your life and what you want to accomplish, they're a lightweight whimsy, one unimportant distraction among many threatening to derail you from something deeper. Or maybe social media tools are at the core of your existence. You won't know either way until you sample life without them. So I think it's interesting his language that they're a lightweight whimsy, an unimportant distraction. I think that's his way of getting at what you're saying, Chris, that for a lot of us, if we took stock of what these things actually really are and really do, they're lightweight in comparison to what we could be doing with our time and energy. Now, it's interesting because as I think about the listeners of this podcast, there's probably two groups of people, right? There's people who social media is sort of an extension of their work life. And so maybe it's I'm in design, I'm in marketing, I'm in communication, I'm in business, and social media is a way of sort of extending my reach in that. There's a whole nother set of people that social media is primarily about my private life. So it's like I think about when my wife was a stay-at-home mom with young kids, it's sort of like it's a way to interact with people and have some adult conversation in the middle of a day, you know, that can be really sort of in some ways an escape, but also a meaningful escape and connecting me with people that I wouldn't stay connected with otherwise. So it's interesting to think about. I think Cal Newport's book is written more toward that first category of people who envision social media as like, well, it's extending my reach and my ability to do meaningful work, to your point, Chris. And he's saying it might not be. It might be distracting you from meaningful work. There's the other question of like, more to your point, Dusty, as people step back from this, how might it deepen our actual relationship and our actual conversation rather than providing what might be a veneer of social interaction that isn't very deep and doesn't actually really go to sort of build the social fabric that's required to really sustain important relationships?
Yeah, and I want to jump back to those two questions real quick. You know, he says that, you know, would the last 30 days have been notably better if I hadn't been able to use the service? And then two, did people care that I wasn't using the service? And then he in fact says right after that, if you can answer both of those no, then I'm encouraging you to quit it permanently. I want to, well, maybe. Like, I want to be a little bit lenient there and just say, maybe, maybe not. That's up to you as the end user. But it has definitely changed the way I've interacted with social media. And I think once I get back on, it's going to change the way that I consume it, meaning just not perpetually all the time. The other reason why this topic is important for us is that social media is not going away. It's here to stay. Companies are hiring social media experts, and like you can like get a job now as a Facebook guru for Gallup or something. And so I think it's just important if you're a Christian to start thinking about how social media is being used in your life and in the lives of those around you. If it is here to stay, Christians should be thinking deeper about these kinds of things, which is why it's worth putting out here and just making us think about it.
What's the, so this guy, I don't know if this dude's a Christian or not, but he's writing it from a business perspective, right? What's the implication for Christians to think about deep work as far as our worldview goes, as far as how Jesus calls us to live. I mean, if I'm sharing Bible verses and being encouraging on Facebook and Twitter, like, maybe that's what Jesus wants me to do. But maybe it's pulling me something away from something deeper that the Lord wants me to experience. What is that? What are we calling people to experience deeper?
One answer to that would be, am I contributing to my culture? And or am I just letting things like social media suck my time and energy and my imagination and my idleness? Or we talked about boredom. That means that I'm not, for me, that's why I got off for a brief moment, was just to say, man, I just don't have any empty space. And I have empty space. I just let all these other things take it. So I think one thing would just be to say, how do I engage that meaningfully and then contribute? And so the last thing Christians should do is just create more noise, I think, on social media. I think if we are going to be putting things out, it should be profitable. I think about Ephesians 4:29, the things that we're talking about should be profitable to those who hear. So that's, you know, one quick answer.
I have a friend who has a degree from an Ivy League school and became convicted that he got all the way through his education without actually having to read any real strong classical authors. And so he made a commitment to read 10 pages a day, every single day. So think about it, that's 3,600 pages a year, right?
Yeah.
And so that's, so his trade-off has been, what I'm giving up with social media is the capacity to read 10 pages a day of Aristotle. And that takes concentration. Like, you can't read Aristotle as you're falling asleep, right? It's like you got to focus a little bit. And so I think if he were in the conversation, he would probably say something like, for him, the trade-off is, could I put Bible verses on Twitter and interact? Sure, I could. But I'm trading a depth of being, a depth of personhood, a depth of intellect. And it's not a fair trade. Like, I think that sometimes Christians can have this calculus that says, well, it's about the effect I'm having on the world. And so if I'm putting something out there and people have to reckon with it on Facebook, then that means I'm having an impact on the culture.
Maybe.
But like, I think about a guy like Eugene Peterson. You guys remember the interview with Bono where somebody wanted to go meet you two, and he's like, I'm translating Isaiah right now. Sorry, I can't make it. You know, and the interviewer was like shocked, and he was like, you said no to Bono? He's like, I'm translating Isaiah, man. Like, I'm deep in the Hebrew text, you know? And I just think, like, I wonder if that kind of depth for Christians over 60 or 70 years of life is more helpful to the end result of passing on a robust and vibrant faith than, gosh, did I check Facebook tonight and respond to somebody's status update or get an argument with somebody about a Bible topic, you know?
Yeah, because let's be honest, posting Bible verses or throwing out some evangelistic message on Facebook is not the same thing as doing that face-to-face with someone. Yep, and so to try to, again, this goes back to, how are you equating the value of the work that you're committing to? And so to sort of elevate what social media is and the kind of work it is and the kind of messaging it is, I think we have an inflated view of the importance of that. And so I think that's an important thing we need to challenge. It's like, if I'm getting sucked into this, do I have an overinflated view of its importance versus other things?
Well, and guys, James K. Smith is going to be here in May. And one of the questions he wants to press when it comes to this is, how are these things forming us? How are our constant access to technology forming us? The interesting thing is, Cal Newport's asking some similar questions without the spiritual framework, because what he's saying is it forms us in perpetual distraction. And so it works against our ability to do deep and meaningful work. I think for Christians then, Mike, there's this question, not just like, I think Christians have this sort of simplistic way of thinking of like, well, if it's not hurting me and it's not hurting anybody and I'm contributing something, then isn't it okay? Well, morally, sure. But I think the deeper question is, what formative power does it have on our attention, on our presence, on our ability to reflect and think? And even as you're sharing about your experience, Dusty, you're saying like, man, I found a power to be present conversationally that I wasn't practicing, you know, because of the existence of social media. And I think that's the reality, is that these things form us to be distracted. And in ways like, it, sort of, if I, at whatever point I get bored with our conversation, I can just pick up my phone and I don't have to tell you like, you're boring me now. You just know when I pick up my phone and start scrolling, oh yeah, I'm kind of bored with this meeting or this conversation, right? And so there is a way, there's no one really talking very deeply about this. There is a way that this reality of social media is forming us, that matters, and that as you even as you talk about, Dusty, as we think about, you know, how are we going to raise our kids, and what, you know, what sort of patterns do we want to set? What sort of liturgy do we want in our home? Is it a liturgy of perpetual distraction, or is it a liturgy of presence with one another that maybe sees social media as a tool, but not as a primary focus of attention?
So what I hear you guys saying is that social media isn't the problem.
No, that might be too simple, but go on.
But we could try to fill the space with anything. If you talk about like a liturgy for life, and are we going to be a household that's constantly distracted? That's not a social media problem. That's lots of things. That could be family activities. That could be extracurricular school activities. That could be a bunch of things that you're just letting take control of your life, take control of your schedule, and pull you away from maybe deep, meaningful things.
Yes, certainly true. It's just that social media gives us a power there that we did not previously have.
Hmm.
There's an accessibility and a presence of it, an immediacy of it
that is
freakishly addictive.
The other thing that I think social media is doing is it's changing our curiosity. I don't think we have to be as curious when we're with real people anymore, because we know so much about them. We've seen their last photos. We know where their last vacation is. We don't have to be as dialed in. So that's the one thing that I've caught myself thinking. I've actually wondered about, I wonder how so-and-so's doing. I don't talk to them very often, but I did keep up with them on social media. And so now that I'm not, I wonder what Christmas was like. And so I think it's changing curiosity. And if you think about that from a Christian perspective, man, we need to become curiously, you know, going back to C.S. Lewis, he would argue, right, for kind of a curious, romantic pursuit of creativity. And I think social media is changing a lot of that.
Cal Newport ends this chapter of his book with a story of Arnold Bennett, who's an English author near the turn of the 20th century. And the story he tells about Arnold Bennett is he was trying to provoke Londoners to think differently about their life. And he said, if you think about working an 8-hour day, most people think about that as their sort of daily work, and the other 16 hours as just sort of ramp up and ramp down. And I think that's just as true today as when Arnold Bennett wrote that, right? There's this sense that we think about our work life as life, and like whatever I do in the morning before I go to work and in the evening after I come home from work is sort of like getting in and getting out of my work day. Arnold Bennett says, that's dumb. You're only at work 8 hours a day. The 16 is actually the majority of your day. What if you thought about a full 24-hour day as your day, and think about the time you spend sleeping, and then think about, what would it mean to have as much intentionality about your leisure time as you do about going to work? And the whole point is that the point that Cal Newport is making is that social media, because it's an easy form of distraction, because it's so easy, there's a low barrier of resistance, it easily makes us thoughtless about our leisure time. And therefore we're not intentional about, what am I spending my time after work doing? And so he talks about all the sites that are present just to sort of like bait you in and get you to click and get you to read something. And you know how this goes, like you're down the rabbit hole and you've been on there for 30 minutes reading some dumb article. You're like, how did I get here? What am I doing just now? Oh yeah. And so he's saying, maybe the answer is sort of to be as deeply thoughtful about our leisure time as we are about our work. And if that were the case, would we read more? Would we have people over for dinner more? Would we stimulate better conversation? Would we be proactive about the other hours of our day rather than sort of, you know, thoughtless and reactive and sort of just clicking around and using social media as a crutch?
Another just pastoral thought for parents. I think this is an area where parents have to start thinking, you know, proactively. Because social media will just happen to your kids, along with tones and ringtones and dings and notifications. And so I think it's just important for us as parents to start thinking about, you know, as long as we have our children under our roof, how are we discipling them into this as it comes to them? And so I think we have to get proactive on that conversation. We have to beat our kids to the conversation of social media, because it's just normal for them to be on social media all the time.
All right, so listeners, we want to challenge you with Cal Newport's challenge. Would you consider stepping away from social media for 30 days and asking yourself those two questions? Did you miss it? Would your days have been notably better had it been present? And did anyone know you were gone? I think maybe a really helpful discipline for the new year. And we'll see all of you in person rather than on social media. Thanks for listening.
That's going to do it for today's conversation. If you do happen to quit social media, be sure you subscribe to the Wednesday Conversation podcast so you don't want to miss an episode and you won't have Facebook and Twitter to remind you. So go to cdomaha.com/TWC and subscribe. And we hope that you join us next week for another Wednesday Conversation.